From 1862 through 1865, there was a series of spectacular arsons committed against circuses, carnivals, boardwalks, and freak shows all across the U.S., at least 23 different places across 12 states, burned to the ground, people dead in every instance. This all culminated with the burning of a museum of human oddities that was owned by none other than P.T. Barnum himself. But the thing is, and here's the thing, this story isn't about the arsons. This is a story about revenge. It's a story about love. It's also a story about freaks. A whole army of freaks. This one is called The Coyote Princess. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem, killers, cannibals, and cults, fearful fiction and furious fact, tall tales, and terrible truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. What we think of today as freak shows, these are really just specialty entertainment shows. Today's freaks are usually people that self-apply the term. They're performers with unusual talents and abilities. They're not people born with deformities or captives or indentured servants or mentally challenged people pressed into service. Not in our country, anyway. Not anymore. But in the 1800s, freak shows were a very different thing. They were, in my estimation, the stuff of nightmares, and not because of the freaks themselves, but the treatment they were consigned to. You might think of the good examples, the tattooed man, the bearded lady, the world's smallest this, the world's biggest that. But the truth was so much darker. People born with physical abnormalities and birth defects were put on display as literal monsters. Mentally challenged people were promoted as missing links or lost tribesmen, and people of color were sometimes dressed in traditional native garb and touted as savage examples of their exotic race. I need to throw something out real quick before I continue so that I don't have to disrupt a perfectly horrific narrative later on. But I'm using the term freaks in the context of the time. In no way am I insinuating that these people were anything other than human beings, as deserving of dignity as anybody else. For the sake of historical accuracy, however, I will refer to them as freaks. This is not a value judgment. Anyway, at the time, people had a real hunger for freak shows, and they really started to catch on nationwide. At carnivals, at circuses, at amusement parks, there were a lot of freaks being exploited in a lot of different places. Things leveled up in 1841 when P.T. Barnum, the famous showman, bought the American Museum in New York City. There, he featured live attractions and human exhibits of freaks every day, and he was smart enough to use a rotating schedule so that the crowds could always come back and never get bored. What the American Museum really did was to further legitimize what the freak show was all about. It made it okay to go pay two bits, to laugh at somebody that had it worse than you. And not to wear my heart on my sleeve, but to me there's something uniquely evil about this concept. And not just the freak shows. There were also so-called ethnological exhibits, or human zoos that purported to be scientific, but it was really just a glass jail to lock up anyone who looked different, to put them on display, to be mocked and humiliated. And while it may be true that some of these freaks were there in this life by choice, most weren't. And what does it matter? Because what kind of choices did any of these people have back then, even in the best of cases? P.T. Barnum was, as always, a trailblazer. And so once the American Museum started posting boffo numbers and making headlines, there were a lot of other fledgling businessmen who wanted to horn in on the freak show racket. One of these men was named Wallace Granger, a former hustler and carnival barker out of East St. Louis, who had secured the financing to start up his own show that he called Stranger Granger's Shocking World of Human Oddities. It was a series of tents set on an old fairgrounds. And even in the context of time and place, this particular freak show was a pit of hell. Barnum might have treated his freaks like objects, but at least they were valuable objects. Granger didn't even have that level of respect for his performers. Sometimes his freaks were just captured Native Americans, dressed in tribal costumes, and in some of the more horrific cases, people were intentionally disfigured for the betterment of the show. But it worked. He started to build a name for himself, and over time, the attendance started to gradually increase, mostly thanks to his star attraction, the Coyote Princess. That's what Granger called her, anyway. She might have had a real name before he found her, but who cared? Her face and her mouth were so dramatically deformed that she couldn't speak, which was, to be candid, beside the point, because as a Native American woman, she had no voice to speak of anyway. Granger had been fortunate enough to find her near death in the desert. He brought her back to his show and shackled her down inside a tent to put her on display that very night, before he even was sure that she was going to live. He christened her the Coyote Princess. And in all of his days, Granger had never before seen deformities like these, deformities so profound. Her body seemed entirely normal, and she even had a full, lush head of black hair. But her face, oh God, her face. Instead of a nose and an upper jaw, she had a long, lumpy snout. Her nostrils were stretched out inches long, rimmed with thin black coyote flesh. Her teeth were yellow and sharp, and her tongue was just a useless gray lump that hung out of the corner of her wide, drooling mouth. Her eye sockets were oblong, just like the rest of her face, but the hazel eyes set within, they were still very much human. Granger kept her chained and guarded for some weeks, but then he slowly came to realize that she was not going to try to escape. Those deep-set eyes of hers always seemed to be filled with tears, plagued with some silent misery. Not that he cared about that. He only cared that she was too broken to try and get away, which saved him the extra worry about his new meal ticket. Although he had three tents full of freaks, now they were all background noise. The world's tallest albino, Professor Fatface, a morbidly obese man with an eidetic memory, the missing link, who was just an African-American man with profound retardation. There was the mummy, a woman with advanced stage progeria, Ned the geek, the blockhead, the human torso, the midget family, the hermaphroditic conjoined twins, Bert and Bertha. None of them could compare to the unnerving majesty of the Coyote Princess. Granger gave her this bombastic backstory about her father being a legendary Indian warrior chieftain and her mother, the goddess Coyote Queen. He even bought costume jewelry and gowns to complete her look. Through it all, the woman just sat, like she was waiting to die. Not because of her face, but because of her broken heart. She was just a young witch when she first saw the Navajo boy. She was aware of the differences between them and their people, and she understood clearly that they could never be together, and yet she was captivated by him. She took the form of a bird to watch him fish and hunt during the day, and at night became a snake to creep into his tent and watch him tell stories to his brothers and sisters. But there was to be no love in her future. She would never marry, mate, reproduce, settle down in one place. This was not the way of the skinwalker. At a very young age, perhaps too young, she'd made a choice to follow the dark path. And while she might have come to regret that choice, she knew full well there was no going back. She was possessed of incredible powers and abilities to shapeshift and cast spells. But a love like this, well, it was forbidden. Regardless, being a strong-willed, independent young woman, the witch was compelled to continue. After a few years, the boy had grown into a handsome, strapping young man, and she could no longer merely watch. She took her human form and approached the young man. Perhaps it was her magic. Perhaps it really was love at first sight. But from the first time they touched hands, they became inseparable. It was the kind of love they didn't have a word for back then. It's the kind of love we still don't have a word for today. And she knew that they could not hide a passion that burned so brightly. Not from his people, nor from hers. And so, they tried to run. They did not make it very far. Within a few weeks, short, blissful weeks, the elders of the Skinwalkers had tracked her down. And while she had expected no mercy, the extent of their cruelty left her shattered. Their punishment was to strip her abilities and to twist her form into something that she could never change. They stretched out her face into a terrifying parody of a coyote's muzzle. And then, as she watched on helplessly, they began to punish her lover. Where her face had been transformed and her body left weak but undamaged, they did quite the opposite to the young man. They left his face unchanged so that he would forever remain the handsome boy who attracted her, and turned the rest of him into a sickening mutation of a coyote. She retained her intelligence, her memories, and all her feelings. But it was hard to tell if the boy had these things or not. He was now more animal than man. And he ran from his twisted lover in fear. The Skinwalkers left her alone to die in the desert, which probably would have been the most merciful fate she could have hoped for. Instead, she ran into Wallace Granger. Although she was malnourished and weak, and although she no longer had her witchcraft, she still might have fought back. She still might have fled from there. But flee to where? Fight for what? She sat. She slept. She stared out blankly as people paid to laugh at her and recoil from her hideous face. There were moments of kindness. The other freaks brought her food, helped her to bed and to dress. They even talked to her, even though they weren't sure if she could understand them or not. The world's tallest albino showed her card tricks. Professor Fatface recited old poems from memory. The mummy brushed out her hair. Ned the Geek fed her chicken's head soup. The hermaphroditic Siamese twins Bert and Bertha sang to her. And she appreciated, on some level, what they were trying to do. She simply couldn't bring herself to care. Not even when she witnessed how Granger and his employees treated these kind people. Not just the conditions, the feeding and housing them like animals, but also the beatings, the abuse, the rapes, and how they so casually discarded people when they were no longer useful. Even then, she couldn't bring herself to care. She merely waited for the day they would discard her, or kill her, or burn her, and then it would all be over. Some months passed, and the ticket sales for the Stranger Granger Shocking World of Human Oddities started to decline. The Coyote Princess was still the biggest draw, but she'd been just sitting and staring for far too long, and her luster was starting to wear off. So Granger went out west a little bit and tracked down a few traveling carnivals and freak shows. He brought a bankroll with him and toured three states buying fresh freaks to rejuvenate his show and prop up attendance. When he returned, he had six new attractions, one of which was truly remarkable. It appeared to be an oversized, malformed coyote, one with a human face. Princess went on stage as usual that night. They had a fresh boost of interest in the show now, because her tent was located right next to the cage on wheels of the so-called Wolf King. Granger thought the pairing of Wolf King and Coyote Princess should be enough to put him back on top. Sitting on stage, the woman listened to comments the people made about her, as she always did. But now it seemed they all looked on her a bit more kindly, and she heard with tremendous sadness how repulsed they all were by her lover. Her own suffering and punishment and abject humiliation, those were her crosses to bear. But she could not bear this. The young man's face was as handsome as it had ever been, and his eyes were empty and sad. In all her time in the freak tent, the Coyote Princess had never once tried to escape or rebel against her captors in any way, no matter what they did. She had not been bound or guarded in a very long time. This made it easy for her to slip out of her tent in the middle of the night and walk over to the trailers where Granger and his men slept. She asked none of the other freaks for help. She said not a word. Not that she could. She started a fire under Granger's trailer, and when he came running out, she beat him to death with a length of pipe. She was taking the keys off his body when the other employees and roustabouts started to respond to the fire. The Coyote Princess was ready to fight them all alone. But she found that she did not have to. The missing link knocked down one of the rousties, and Ned the Geek bit out his throat. Bert and Bertha wielded twin straight razors, while the world's tallest albino started more fires. The blockhead, the human torso, Professor Fatface, the midget family, they all picked up arms and began to lay waste to the shocking world of human oddities. The Coyote Princess unlocked the large cage in the middle of the compound. She got down on her knees, and her lover licked the tears from her cheeks. She looked into his eyes and saw that he was in there. Deep down, buried, but he was there, and he saw her too. He remembered what they were. That was the night that it all started. That was the night the American freak show began to die. Not because of growing acceptance of science or the awareness of birth defects. That would come in time. But this was something else. The freak show started to die because the princess and her lover started to kill it off. Kill them off. One by one, tent by tent, show by show, the princess and her loyal court sought out the traveling freak tents, the carnivals, the boardwalks, the circuses. They found wherever humans were kept enslaved and put on display as subhuman. They found them and burned them down. They released the animals and the freaks, and they slaughtered the owners and the workers. At each tent, at each stop, the ragtag group of freaks grew and grew. In 1865, they were a small, nightmarish army. When they reached what was considered the biggest, most successful, and most legitimate exhibition of human freaks in the country, P.T. Barnum's American Museum, which burned to the ground with 16 people inside. None of them freaks. The museum never reopened, and after that, the industry itself started to fall apart, partially because there was slightly less interest in freaks these days, but within the industry itself, it was becoming regarded as a very dangerous line of work. No one knew quite who that woman was, but they'd all heard of her and her freaks tearing through the countryside. Even though she had never spoken a single word, the Coyote Princess had finally made herself heard. She had gotten her revenge and destroyed the entire freak industry. And after that, the princess, her lover, and her army of freaks moved to Florida, where their families and their descendants have prospered ever since. Thanks for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. I hope you enjoyed the tale of the Coyote Princess. If you want to learn more about the Skinwalkers, check out the episode titled Blood in the Sand. You can send feedback to the show to ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com or find me on Facebook under the same name. And please, if you like what you heard, leave a review for my show at any of the major reviewing platforms. Although I guess if you didn't like what you heard, the chances of you still listening at this point are fairly slim. The music for tonight's story was provided by Ergo Fizmiz, Pi Leezer, and The Circus Humunculus. Links to all of these bands are available in the show notes, as well as Chelsea Oxendine, the performer of our theme music. The episode was produced and edited by Jeff Davidson, who, fun fact, in his sideshow days, used to go by the name of Bobo Belobo, the One-Eyed Hobo.